You know what? Shout out to Coach Beardy.
Yeah, hell yeah.
For the
man.
Windsor Lancers. That's my big winner from this combine. Shout out Randall Beardy. You beautiful man, you coaching up these fellas and giving them a chance to pursue their dreams at this next level. Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics on our journey towards the CFL draft, having just taken in a weekend and then some of National Combine excellence. Let me highlight excellence coming out of the University of Manitoba, where we saw some great things both on the field and I think from, some things we want to really shout out the CFL for. But before we get into all those things, as always, Tom, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I am doing so well. One of the many benefits of loving Canadian football is that you get it so much earlier than the Americans do. Having a full-blown combine that's here, and not just a combine, but a full-blown practice within that, and actually getting to see some guys and some live bullets here, or at least somewhat, has just helped to scratch an itch that I have been missing since last year. So I'm very, very happy to see Canadian football back, which has undoubtedly put a smile on my face because of it. Not to say that there's never one there anyways.
No, we can hear it through the mics, and if you're tuning on YouTube, you can see it from one side of the screen all the way to the other. We were so excited for this for so many reasons. The obvious, of course, being just we are OUA football and as a extension, Canadian football junkies, and wanting to see some of these matchups, getting prepared for, you know, who from our humble little conference here in the OUA is going to take that next step, who's looking good, getting to see some of these neat matchups you get to see when all of a sudden you see some of these interconference guys and, you know, players who were from NCAA or the international global scene and everything like this come together. But Tom, going into this, were you aware that it was kind of this East-West 2.0 style that they were doing for the combine this year? Because frankly, I'm tuning in on the stream and I was blown away, and I don't stay all that up to date on information that comes out, because most of it comes out via socials and we know that I'm not overly present there. Was that something you were aware of this year?
No, I going into this, I had always assumed and had, which has been done for a while, at least that I knew, these were just going to be one-on-ones, very similar to the invitational format that was out in Waterloo, where it was O-line, D-line one-on-ones, running back, linebacker one-on-ones, and then wide receiver DB one-on-ones all throughout. And this was, there was a tiny bit of that, but it was one-on-ones for the O and D-line to start with, and then they moved to two-on-twos, three-on-twos, and then full line. And then they just went right into Skelly period for O and D line, or offense and defense, and then right into a 12-on-12 period with like 50 plays in there. So this was completely new to me, and I was very happily surprised to see some actual football.
Yeah, and this is where I think, just from the jump, to give all the credit to the folks at the CFL who pieced this together, because essentially they put on a giant practice where they start up with like an offense defense period where they were eventually calling plays, though sometimes with cards, but like, hey, look, come on, like,
yeah,
fair, right? But offense defense period, kind of the way you might, sort of leading into your warm up, a full team, full group warm up. They go into some indie periods and you're seeing some of these guest coaches getting to work with the positional groups and getting to see them in that capacity leading up to those competition periods into this 12-on-12 period. And it's just, so let's start from the standpoint of the formatting of it, because I think that idea is brilliant. There's some things I know we're going to nitpick a little bit about, maybe in terms of some of the production pieces of it. And, you know, is Ford and Ferguson on the broadcast? They had Willie Jefferson as the sideline reporter, which is one of my favorite things, because he had this great energy, this great excitement and enthusiasm. He's in his own backyard there. But, you know, we talk so much because you mentioned the one-on-ones and the two-on-twos and the offensive line perspective of it. We talk so much about the chemistry on O-line, right? The needed reps and sometimes years of reps you have with that person next to them. And on the one hand, I'm watching those when they go to those two-on-twos and I'm like, no way, they're actually running games now. Like, because, like, for those who don't know, like, crossover period on the offensive line, O-line, D-line, pass rush one-on-ones, like, the advantage is the D line to begin with. It's you know, like, save me any defensive people out there saying, well, you know the count. It's like, well, you know it's a pass play, okay? Like, like, freeze on that. When you add in a game when the defense can say, okay, let's run, you know, like, tackle, you know, is going to attack the guard, and then the end's going to loop, or whatever it might be. Any games like that, it becomes that much harder because you don't have that communication piece. So on the one hand, I'm watching that, I'm saying, and of course we're starting from the O-line perspective here, I'm saying, oh, that's a tough beat where you're with a guy who you've never maybe had a single rep with, having to figure these things out. On the other hand, I'm thinking the evaluators recognize that. They clearly know this is a hard situation, and it's literally saying, hey, we're putting you in a really tough situation. Figure it out. Let's see how you problem solve in a situation that is beyond, or that is certainly not optimal for you to begin with. Let's start with that one, because that intrigued me the most, where it's like, that's a drill that already disadvantages O-line, and then to have it in that partnered group, I thought, that's an interesting decision. And I kind of could see two sides of it. But what did you take of that perspective?
Well, I think it goes to a larger conversation around the entirety of the CFL combine that was here, because obviously you've got that same level throughout everything. You know, obviously the offense and the O and D lines, specifically as offensive linemen, you and I are, understand how difficult it can be to play next to somebody and to have switches or to stick with your guy and just be on that same level of chemistry right from the get-go. But you have that as well with the defensive backs and understanding who's going to be where, and the same thing with receivers and every single position group. To me, I think that is so impactful for the GMs and for the folks who are there, because especially if you're going to be using a first or second round pick, you're expecting that person to come in and be a playmaker right away, to either start or to contribute on the field in some way, shape, or form. And in those scenarios, you're going to be dropped in with a bunch of people that you have no idea with. You're going to have a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of preseason games, and then you're expected to be right there. Chemistry's got to be great, and you got to go forward. So I think that this is a great opportunity for folks who are taking a look at people saying, you know what, this person really did well when they were dropped into things. I think they've got the capabilities to make that next jump and to get that chemistry really quickly on this position group. Or I really liked what I saw from this person, but they still had a little bit of awkwardness between them and their counterparts. So maybe they're a later round draft pick where we know that they can contribute, but it's going to take them a little bit more time. So I'm not going to waste an early round draft pick on something like that. So I thought it was really smart in that regard to really put them into that setting, because if you get drafted, you're not going to have played with anybody else on that team. You're going to be expected to contribute and to get that chemistry going as quickly as possible.
I think that's a great take on it. And it reminds me of so many of the things that Coulter Woodmansey, of course, right guard for the Hamilton Tiger-Cats, alumni from the Guelph Griffins and Northern Red Knights and Toronto Junior Argos, talking about, like, when you get into the league, it becomes that much more real, as in terms of, it's not just your job, but you are involved in the jobs of folks all over the place. And just, it's, you know, you can either cut it, you can either put in the hours and the time to refine your technique, skill, and all these things, or the next person's coming in. And we know that's the case at the university level, that much more turned up when you get to the pro level. So I think that's a good take on it. While we're with the O-line D-line area of it, we might as well have, because I know we had some comments about that. I mean, for one, hey, look, I love what we saw. Just get that tight film. Mm-hmm. Get up on a what do you call the hijack, the skyjack machine, not mm-hmm. the hijack, the skyjack machine, and just get that tight cut. We don't need you, like, along the line of scrimmage, right? Again, you can flip it, you can have one, so every now and then maybe you go behind the D line, you're behind the line, but that's all you need for that. And I know there's a lot of names we'll talk about. Like, guys, we were excited going into this to see, like, Cooper Hamilton, who, you know, took some reps both at his natural tackle position and at guard as well. But really, it was all about these Windsor offensive linemen. And George Una, who, between the time we spoke about your experience being at the Invitational Combine and this one, I took the liberty, and do yourselves all the favor of doing the same, which is to find his highlight tape and watch his season he had. And it was reflective in everything he did during this practice. He can play every position, probably every position on the O-line, extremely versatile on the inside, playing center and the guard positions, and was, you know, a guy who doesn't didn't overwhelm me with his size, actually, which was almost that much more impressive because it's his technique that you're just like, wow, his leverage, his hands, his posture. And I'm sure he's strong as an ox and he's obviously a big dude, but it wasn't as if he's just this brick wall type specimen. George Flippin' Una, man, he was fun to watch in that crossover period.
Absolutely. And he goes back to this idea of how valuable it is for the, in this combine setting, to have these on-field segments here. Because yeah, like you said, when you look at his stats and his testables, his testing, I should say, he stands at 6'2" 3/8". He weighs in at 313, did 24 on the bench, 5'3", 40. Like, he's got, they're good numbers, don't get me wrong, but they're not jumping off the page at you. And then he puts on the pads and then you can see what this guy can do. And you're going, oh my goodness. And there was a one-on-one session. I can't remember who it was. I didn't get a chance to see the number that he was going up against. But ball is snapped. He gets maybe 1 yard back and just stonewalls the defensive lineman who he's going against. And remember, like, these aren't scrubs. They are Canadian athletes invited across the country and sometimes in the States as well, because they are some of the best in their position at this level. And to have George Una stonewall one of them, it was just really impressive. Now, obviously, he really showcased his stuff in the later part of those one-on-ones, in the two-on-twos as well, and then into the 12-on-12. But I was really, really impressed with him and the other two, a total of three Windsor offensive linemen, which is, if you're wondering why Windsor has been so good recently, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, you know, it's great when you have those star running backs. It's even better when they're running behind just an absolute just tidal wave of an offensive line. Mm-hmm. But speaking of jumping off the page, and we'll stay in the trenches, but let's stay close in terms of our OUA brethren. Luke Brubaker, who was, you know, caught folks' attention. I mean, he's been on, you know, anyone who pays attention's radar since he made the jump to football from his previous athletic endeavors, but jumps off the page, you know, in putting up a 38-inch vertical, running a 4.69 40, doesn't do the bench. And I can't recall necessarily all of his one-on-one reps per se, but from that piece alone, and any comments you have otherwise, I mean, just that was just, you know, it's fun where, like, you know, sometimes people have that natural talent and you're like, oh, you're a football player, you know how to put yourself in the right position, you study the game, all these types of things. And there's some guys where it's like, oh, you put up all these crazy numbers. Some guys are both. And then from what we've been seeing from Luke, and then seeing him put up these numbers, like, oh yeah, okay, it makes sense why you're tormenting, you know, offensive tackles, tight ends, running backs, and quarterbacks for the last 2.5 years, is because you're an absolute just beast. I didn't see the highlights of him running or jumping or any of those pieces of it. But, like, let's talk about him. I mean, we've been talking about him for now for 2 years, but what'd you make of his outing this weekend?
Oh, he showcased why we, and especially Jack Moore, have been so high on this guy the entirety of his time at Laurier. He's just, first and foremost, a freak athlete. You really saw that in the positions that he was able, or the plays that he was able to get into. And even when you look at his stats, he's 6'5" and a quarter, 246 pounds, and ran a 4.69. His vertical was 38 inches. That was the third highest. And by the way, the other two guys that beat him, he has 50 pounds on. So it was just unbelievable to see this guy move and kind of do his thing. Now, obviously, if you're a Laurier football fan or an OUA football fan like we are, this isn't a huge surprise to you because you've been seeing this guy and how he's been able to work. But I was really happy that he got the shout out at the very beginning of the broadcast from Marshall Ferguson, talking about the position groups and who was grading out the highest. After the first day of the 40 yard and the bench press, nobody was really talking about him all that much. There was a few mentions of him on the broadcast, but everybody was talking about Benjamin LeBros and all of these other guys. And I'm like, yes, you absolutely, like, those guys are incredible. Everybody there is incredible. Don't get me wrong. But this is a D lineman putting up these numbers. Like, this is insane. And I think if you're a Laurier football fan, The thing you are praying for is that his shoulder still needs some time to really heal up. That's why he didn't do the bench press here. And this CFL scouts go, "You're a freak. Go back to school, get healthy, have another year, and then come back in." And that's the only thing you are praying that Luke's needs a little bit more time on that shoulder because he was really impressive.
And pretty well all these schools are hoping for some variation of the same thing. And a guy you did get to see in Jason Janvier-Messier, who makes the jump from the Invitational to the National. And again, this is a way of not only highlighting his success, but specifically the formatting of this practice, of this style of the combine as a practice, was when they cut to the D-line indie drills and they just have the giant tackle bags set up, the big wobble bags or whatever you call them. And they're just clearly saying, all right, you're just pulling a pass rush move on one side, flip your hips, do it on the other side. And what I love about watching that drill is we talk about all the measurables in terms of the 40, in terms of the bench press, the verts, the three cone drill, and the various agility drills get into this piece a little bit. But more so, what I like in watching them do that drill is you're getting it out of something that's a little more static, just a vertical jump, just a bench, just a straight. And he moves like it's like the proverbial hot knife through butter, like a slalom skier, just bobbing and weaving through. And you compare it to some other guys and guys who we've been watching for years now who dominate on the field, and not to take away from their ability, but seeing it in this context that we never get to see them, of just how do you move when you're unimpeded. And of course, the game is clearly not played when you're unimpeded, but we obviously saw a lot of positive things from him from the combine you were at, watching that indie period. And again, both to shout out the nature of this combine method, but also how he was looking was like, mwah, chef's kiss. Cause that was just, you just watch him go through those bags and you're like, that is like the mobility, the agility, all the abilities it takes to do what he did. And you're just checking boxes of like, yeah, that's special. And the numbers he puts up as well in terms of his measurables are good too. But that really, again, I thought was a great point of his success and then the nature of this combine.
One of the things I love the most about this is exactly what you're talking about. They showed the individual drills as well as the competitive periods. Something that is oftentimes just assumed, but I don't think I can't remember how often it's really talked about, is body control. How well are you able to control yourself in that same fluidity like you were talking about here? And JJ Messier, that is 100% one of the things that was on display during that period as well. In that same vein, and no, I'm jumping on ahead a little bit here, but I also wanted to shout out Jared Kasari for that same kind of thing. They did another running back version of that where it's really focusing on pressing the gap and then jump cutting into either the inside or outside gap, depending on where the pressure is coming from. And between him, Matthew
Peterson.
Peterson, the other first team All-Canadian out of the University of Alberta, and another running back from the States, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but between the three of them, Kasari is instantly gravitating towards, okay, he's got the body control that's here. It's very clear that all three of these running backs, none of them have done this specific drill, so it's taken them a little bit of time, but Kasari picks that up right away, and because of that body control. And then you look over at keeping with the D-line, like you mentioned, JJ Messier for sure, Tyson Hurgot in there as well. And man, like when you see these guys go, and they call it out, there's 19, 18 or 19 defensive linemen at this individual combine, which is an insane number. But you see the body control that's there. You see why these guys are so successful at what they do, especially Messier and Hurgot being experts at getting to the quarterback. It's because you've got that body control and that fluidity to be able to get past an offensive lineman or use the power when they really need to. But yeah, love the fact that you called that out. The body control is such an underrated part of the game and so crucial if you really want to make the next step.
Yeah. And with you bringing up the running backs, and I think Michael Herzog is
Yes,
the
thank
name of
you.
the player, right out of Hillsdale College. I think out of the Windsor area. I think when we had Mr. Brett Hedges on, he had mentioned him in that episode we did with him of the exit meeting on Windsor. Obviously the nature of this being, where are we at right now? Just month or so away from the draft. Of course, what you risk in doing this is, of course, the injuries. And you know, you could tell it's quick whistles. It's only upper pads. And they added on, I don't know the proper name from, they kind of look like those rugby scrum caps that you throw on over top of them to give that extra padding. And just from that standpoint, because again, it adds that extra, that interesting element of, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you do say a crossover period, again, to bring it to O-line, D-line, and you say, hey, look, like maybe you're in a captain's practice in August, right? And you're like, hey, we're in no pad, so no bull rushing, no jump setting. Let's see who's got good feet, who's got good hands, who can replace, who can maintain inside posture, all those types of things. And so on the one hand, it's almost a nice thing thinking from the running back perspectives and just some of these positions where your dominance can come in a variety of ways. Oftentimes from saying, I'm going to lower my shoulder and I'm going to run through you. And you take that away. And it really, again, highlights the raw skill involved in doing it. And as you said, I think Kasari did a beautiful job of that in the 12-on-12 period. They were doing some outside zone scheme plays in there. And you could tell, like, they're just kind of going like your basic fundamental plays that every team's going to have some variation of them. And it's just interesting because, you know, Queens does a lot of those kind of pin and pull outside gap schemes. And he looks so comfortable of just finding those gaps. And then, again, just putting all these things in practice, which not just as a football fan, but as someone who coaches football and as a teacher, where you're seeing Kasari take the skills that you focus in, you hone in this individual period, and then when you go into that 12-on-12, all of a sudden it's, okay, he's pressing his gap, the linebacker fills here, he makes his jump cut. And it's just one of those things where, again, just from me putting on my evaluator's cap of being like, okay, you know, do they have the raw talent? They have their raw athleticism, all those things. Well, we test that already. Check, 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 check for, you know, various points for these guys. How do they do? How do they move? How do they follow instruction? Well, check, 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 check. Great. When you competition, how do they, you know, they're stepping up. We're going to turn up the heat a little bit now. Like, how are you? Great. Check, check. 12 on 12 to actually then see the application of the things you worked on, which from a coach's standpoint is it's catnip because, you know, again, if you're not familiar, like these things aren't random. It's like, okay, here's the big picture we want to work on. Let's break it down nice and small. Let's build it back up towards the end of the practice where we're going to see if we can build, if we built upon those skills, if we properly demonstrated those. And I'm using him as an example just because we were talking about it and I could definitely, I felt like I saw it and I'm sure there's other guys who applied it. But again, just such a great way of this holistic picture of how an athlete performs on their own, but how they also operate within a system. And when you say, okay, I need you to work on this skill, and then we're going to put apply a pressure to it of some kind to see you now apply that learning. And I thought Kasari killed it. I'm sure there's plenty of others, but again, just a shout out to this model to be able to give us that, you know, to evaluate from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And it's so evident if you're somebody like me who watched the first, you know, the bench press and the 40-yard dash and then got a chance to come back and watch the Sunday practice here, because when you're watching that, and it's also the style of how everything is, like the bench press was literally on a stage, it was in an auditorium. You walked up onto a wooden stage with people in bleachers and you're doing the bench press. And like, it's dead quiet. Nobody's saying anything. There's somebody calling out like the reps and maybe, hey, watch your form, your technique, but there's nothing else. Whereas you and I both know, if you're doing testing like before camp starts or something and you're with everybody else, you've got the entire position group, sometimes the entire team around, let's go, push it. And so there's that extra bit of motivation there. It's almost eerie at certain parts to watch that, and it's just silent. And it's like Ryan Berta is putting up 30 on the bench and he's struggling with his last one. And I'm at home going, get it up, you've got 30, let's go. And nobody else is saying anything. But to go from that to then go into the Sunday practice and you see there's camaraderie on the guys and they're doing and even though a lot of them are fighting each other for draft status, and that directly puts into, if you get drafted higher, you get more money off the hop and everything else, all of that kind of goes out the window and you go back to, you are the ultimate competitors. You fell in love with this game and you get a chance to do it and potentially do it for money now. And so you saw it at the end of the 12-on-12, they're going up to each other and they're, you know, giving high fives or giving hugs or whatever, just showcasing that level of respect for each other through this. And I thought that it's just speaks to football in general, because when you're a gamer and when you're really into this, man, it brings people together so damn fast, especially when everybody has that want to try to get better. Iron sharpening iron, man, it was awesome.
Yeah, and like this is just those moments that we long for, as many moments as we can, like this, where you're bringing people across the country, across the globe, really, and just that camaraderie and celebration of football and Canadian football. Moving outside the box a little bit, because another star of the show, and to no one's surprises, of course, Hec Creighton winner, out of Laval from a year ago, in Kevin Mitchell, and darn near catching, well, not just catching every ball thrown his way, but darn near every ball being thrown his way, and not only looking at his success, what he did, but then as kind of thinking of the quarterbacks here, because obviously we knew we had Ben Mayrickle there coming off of the injury riddled season at Ottawa, and just seeing his name there was such a was such a boon, I'm sure, for the whole Ottawa community, and in recognizing that as a sign of his health, and obviously recognition of his ability by the evaluators, of the top evaluators of our game, Casey Bauman out of Augustana University, and Jack Zurgiotis. I don't know if I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, and it, out of Merrimack, and it's only ends up being the quarterback out of Merrimack, throwing the rock on Sunday. Miracle, I think they were saying, was dealing with some type of a stomach illness, which like is heartbreaking. Just to think of, like, man, like, why did you eat whatever that was? And then, but like on the other hand, it's like, okay, at least it's not the shoulder or whatever, or the knee, I think it was that kept him out of this year. Again, from that standpoint, the success of receivers, whether it's Metal, whether it's any of these guys that we saw out there, of course, some of a guy like Mohsin Jamal, who looked really strong out there out of Western, and all these wideouts, and then having the quarterback play limited. I know this was, and not limited as a statement on Zurgiotis, but just in terms of you only have one quarterback. I know that was something you were very aware of, or that caught your attention at the Invitational Combine, of the quarterback play. And then just as a result, how it affects the wide receivers when your success is so directly related. Of course, the evaluators are the best of the best. They recognize that, like, okay, that was a bad ball. That's not the wideout's fault. But let's just talk about from that standpoint. We end up with one quarterback throwing at this event. I think they had another athlete throwing the ball who wasn't a traditional quarterback, if memory serves. But let's talk about that piece. It caught your attention at the Invitational, kind of became a thing at the National as well.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're a wide receiver, you are at the mercy of your quarterback here, because they decide if you get the ball, and they decide how well the ball is thrown to you. And I think at the Invitational, those guys that were there, they struggled. And I think because of that, there's some receivers over there that were a little frustrated with things, and they didn't get the proper showcase with a lot of their stuff. But here, that was not the case. Jack Zurgiotis really did a great job making sure that he at least gave every receiver the opportunity to make the catch. And a lot of them were really great thrown balls as well. So he did, he I think he showcased himself very, very well. The other wide receiver who wanted to get a couple of throws in, Ezekiel Tiede, a wide receiver out of Concordia. He got a couple of throws in the Skelly period. I don't think that he did anything in the 12 on 12. If he did, it was maybe one or two, because Jack certainly had the majority of the reps that were there. But yeah, Kevin Mitchell doing exactly what we expected him to do. And even going into this, having Marshall Ferguson and Dwayne Ford also call out, hey, even when their cameras weren't rolling, he still by far had the most amount of catches. And that goes back to his body control, his route running ability, the hands that he has. The only question that was surrounding him is, can he keep up this production throughout the entire game? Because it seems like he's at the top tier. And throughout the entire practice that you're there, you're like, yeah, seems
Check.
like he's been doing this all 4 days. So yeah, I was really, really impressed to see him on that side of things. The other person that I want to shout out quickly from the defensive side is Jayshon Blackburn, defensive back out of the University of Alberta. He had the pick six in the 12 on 12 period, but he was all over some of these receivers. And there was a few people on the defensive backs that I really enjoyed seeing here. But when you know that there's that quality on that side of things, and you know that, hey, Zergodis is going to be throwing to anybody who's open. There's going to be a game plan around it, whatever. But to obviously already have something of a chemistry with Kevin Mitchell, hey, we're going to double team this guy. We're going to triple team this guy because we know that he's going to get the ball. And to still come down with it like he has done his entire career at the University of Laval, yeah, Kevin Mitchell is pretty damn good at what he does.
He's good at football. And yeah, you mentioned Tyshawn Blackburn with the pick
Yes,
six,
Tyshawn.
throws up the Tyreek Hill, the cheetah, the peace sign on his way out there. And of course, we mentioned the name of Matthew Peterson as well, another Golden Bear present there. And just again to that point of like watching it, as you highlighted, him and Kasara as these two top runners in the whole nation, and just getting to watch them work both in the individual drills and during the 12 on 12 was just. It's so special. Again, like, shout out to the people who put this together. Don't sleep on your laurels. Don't get too high and mighty off of our compliments here, but because there's still things we can make better. But like, that was it was such a fun day to watch, such a fun weekend. Tom, we've talked about so many great names already, just kind of off the top here and just through these conversations. Again, when you see someone really perform, it's not just a function of being like, oh, good day by them, but it's like you're going up against the best of the best and you stood out. Who are some of the other standouts for you that you caught from any component of this combine weekend?
Well, I was very, anytime we do these podcasts, I've got the jerseys up in the background. I bleed maroon no matter what. And my guy, Owen Hubert, I really liked what I saw from him as well, especially in those 12 on 12 periods. He's not quite one of those guys, at least he showed here. He's not quite one of those guys who's just going to beat the offensive lineman outright and be this all-star unbelievable person, but he's always going to have his responsibility. He got a couple of sacks, or at least one sack and a tackle for loss, because he's going up against his guy, and maybe he's not blowing past him, but he ain't getting blown back at all. And full extension, reading the play, as soon as he recognizes where it is, sheds the offensive lineman, comes in and makes a tackle. I loved what I saw from Owen Hubert, and especially in those 12 on 12 periods. Like I said, not somebody who may really be that big playmaker, but is going to have his responsibility and is going to really be able to do his thing. I love that. I know we already talked about him a bunch. I freaking loved everything I saw from Jared Kasary. I loved it, man. His body control that he had was there, and you saw the vision. You saw him take off and get that touchdown in a 12 on 12 period where he's cutting through the offensive and defensive line, and then the turns on the Jets. He says it shows here that he had a 4.7 on that 40. Man, when you get the pads on and you get into open field, I don't know. I think there's a different either. Kasari puts on the Jets even more, or some guys aren't used to, hey, can I hit my top 40 speed when I've got pads on, when I need to change direction and I'm not coming out of a start block? Man, Kasari turned on the burners, got the corner, and was gone. Like nobody was catching him. So I really, really loved what I saw from him in that regard. And then lastly, I wanted to shout, maybe once again, not jumping off the page by any means, but Ife Onyeka, Ifeanyi Onyeka, sorry. I got that first name wrong the entire year. But I really loved what I saw from him, especially in those one-on-one periods. And now, obviously, like you had talked about, the O&D line one-on-ones that's really favored towards the D line. But in that stance, you still get the opportunity to showcase your stuff, to showcase the body control, and showcase the moves that you have. Because while, yes, the defense knows that it is a pass, offense, you know that it's a pass too. So you should be expecting that going back against some of these guys. And I liked what I saw from him. I don't know if he's a top round draft pick, but I think certainly he will go somewhere in this draft. I think he's got some capabilities on specials as well. But just a few guys that really shone out to me. And then obviously Tyshawn Blackburn, like I said, really, really impressed with that.
Yeah, no, Onyeka again, just good seeing him mixing it up with the best of the best. And yeah, I mean, obviously, I have my O-line bias, and it's the same with all the competition periods when, and it's what makes football such a beautiful game at times. One of the main things that makes it so beautiful is like, okay, we know what's going on here. There's no secrets here. And then getting to, the standpoint of when you have a guy like when it's like Onyeka versus, say, Hamilton, right? And they've actually played against each other. And it's like, I've actually studied you for like 2 years now. I know what your moves are. And it's like, well, I've studied you and I know what your moves are. So I think I know what you're going to do, but I also think you know that I know what I'm going to do. And it's this like back and forth of just like, and then you get the rep. So it's like, again, that ability to say what worked, what can you adjust with, and how do you get better? So you're not just doing the same thing over and over again. And another guy, you know, just to, I guess at this point, just go through the gamut of our OUA D lineman, you know, Van Wisher. There's a few times when he was on the inside that I just felt like he was a little bit overmatched. Like you mentioned with Owen Hubert holding his own in that. And I feel like in terms of their stature, you know, you mentioned Hubert 6'3", 7'8", 263. And then where do I have it here? Where do I have it here? Van Wisher 6'3", 7'8", 258. And I feel like at times Hubert did a better job of holding up when he was in the middle than Wisher did. But again, you know, winning some of those battles in one-on-one, holding his gap really well, you know, a product of the Beckmanis defense, you know, he's coached up well in all these things. He goes up against the best of the best against some of those Queens, Golden Gales, offensive linemen, of course, Ryan Berta, who's here, and others who've been drafted as well. So just, you know, shout out to him, shout out to all our guys out of the OUA across the board. What do you got on that one?
Yeah. One last person that I wanted to call out as well. You brought up the name of Van Wishart, and obviously he's fantastic at what he does. But there was a run play in the 12-on-12 period, and I saw Jackson Morkin, offensive lineman out of Windsor, take Wishart and put him into the ground with a hell of a pancake. It was a beautiful thing to watch, and I really wanted to make sure that I shouted that out. Oftentimes, you and I both know offensive linemen do not get the praise that they so rightly deserve, and I loved watching that. It was textbook, man, just a thing of beauty. So Jackson Morkin, also hell of a job.
Salute to you, sir. And you know, Patrick Lavoie to Carlton, again, seeing him play on the inside a little bit more than I believe he was playing at tackle for Carlton this year. You know, also having some good reps in there. You know, I don't know, Tom, like, again, we talked about a lot of these guys out of the Invitational. We're here at the National. Again, the formatting wise, you know, fantastic job seeing what we saw. Like, any last thoughts? I don't know if we need to, what else do you have on this one? I don't think we need to belabor the conversation any more than we have.
Yeah, I really loved as well. So many guys that we could continuously talk about here because they're all stellar athletes. But somebody else who I think raised their draft stock, as people like to say, is AK Gassama, wide receiver out of Manitoba as well. The Golden Bears really had a nice little showcase with the guys that they brought there, including Daniel Shin, offensive lineman for them as well. But AK Gassama really did, I think, a great job in terms of the things that he was asked for. He came out of the flats and a couple of times made a couple of nice grabs. He went over the middle and made a couple of nice grabs. Now, obviously, they're keeping everybody up. It's not full tackles by any means, but it was still impressive to see. It was kind of Kevin Mitall and AK Gassama show in that regard. Also, Mohsen Jamal getting free down the right side for a touchdown was a thing of beauty. And once again, it's funny because when you're watching this, obviously, you know, I'm a Mac guy, Mac grad, Mac alumni. I'm pulling for the Marauders in all cases. But really, when it boils down to this and I'm watching things, I'm pulling for all of the OUA guys and even the U Sports guys in general here. Obviously, there's a lot of guys here that are Canadians that had some time down in the States and they came back here. But I want the U Sports dudes to really do their thing, to showcase their stuff, because our league is a hell of a league as well. So it was an awesome time to get a chance to see all those guys. I really wanted to see Ben Maracle. I really wanted to see my guy, Kane Stevenson, as well, kind of showcase his stuff. Fortunately, those guys weren't able to. And even Jackson Sambach, he was covering Mitall a couple of times, and he had a couple of nice pass breakups. Kevin McVictome had a nice one as well that was almost a pick. Your guy in those GG Nations here. So, yeah, a lot of guys that I think really did well in this regard. And I kind of gave my stance on this, but I'm interested. Who are your, let's say, top three, the guys that you saw? It could be the same people that I saw or not. But I'm interested to see who really jumped off the page for you.
Again, number one was Kasari, and it's not that he's jumping off the page out of anything we haven't seen, but just so excellent to see him do what he did in that capacity. You know, obviously our bias towards the U Sport guys, because that's where my eyes were watching. Hard not to just appreciate what Mitall was doing, and obviously he's, you know, a lot going on in his life in the past year with just off the field and everything like that, and he's still coming out and performing, you know, like the best of the best. Didn't get my guy Gingrin on the field, which you mentioned Kane Stevens. We talked about Ben Maracle. Did you know what Gingrin, I mean, obviously he was able to test, but as far as did you catch anything on that?
No, the only thing that was mentioned was Ben Mariscal. Didn't hear anything for Cade Stevenson or Shendron.
Yeah. Well, again, hopefully all is well there. And just this, you know what? Shout out to Coach Beardy
Yeah, hell
for
yeah,
the
man.
Windsor Lancers. That's my big winner from this combine. Shout out Randall Beardy. You beautiful man, you coaching up these fellas and giving them a chance to pursue their dreams at this next level. That's our real winner here.
Man.
Win City, baby. Let's go.
When
So
you were talking there about Gendron, I thought you were going to give him your third star, even though he didn't play all Sunday. I was like, you Ottawa homer.
Yeah, it's always a trick up my sleeve I have, but again, with how those guys performed, Mueller as well being the third man we didn't talk about. You mentioned Morgan and him working Van Wishart a little bit right after I gave him a shout out. But yeah, no, and yeah, just shout out to CFL, shout out to Canadian football, everywhere it's played, and yeah, Tom, I guess last words to you, my friend.
We talked about it at the beginning of the podcast. It has to be out again. Shout out to the CFL for the stream that they put on, the quality that was there. Obviously, like we said, there was a lot of things that, or there was a few things at least that we would have liked to have seen. I would have loved, especially in this kind of a setting, if they are going for, and it's difficult because they're doing a practice, so they're focusing on the players and they're trying to get the most out of the practice themselves. Selfishly, as a fan, I would have loved for the competitive periods to be broken out. So, like, you start with the O-line, D-line, one-on-ones, they do their thing, and then it's everybody else is in Indy, and then you go into Skelly, and then O-line, D-lines in one-on-ones, and then you come together for 12-on-12 periods so that you get to catch everything rather than this coming back and forth. And I think they did a fantastic job with what they did, but the stream quality was there, the commentator was there. At no point in time am I watching this. If I had this up on my TV, there's nothing that would have said to me, oh, I'm watching a stream here. This was TV quality. It just once again goes to show, man, OUA TV, it's possible. You can do it. You can have this high quality that was here. So just getting a chance to see that and see the quality and the care that came into that was so awesome. And even having guys mic'd up, Dwayne Cameron from out of Calgary was mic'd up. He obviously had Willie Jefferson as the sideline reporter. And you're hearing these coaches talk to the players as, hey, this is what you want to focus on here, and this is what you want to do. And Dwayne Ford said at the beginning of the broadcast, this is as much for the new coaches as it is for the potential players here, because a lot of the coaches that are there, with the exception of obviously a few, but a lot of them are first-time coaches. A lot of them, like Willie Jefferson had said, guys who he had just recently played with who are now stepping into something of a coaching role. And so now you're seeing that transition. How well are you able to teach the next generation? Were you just a great player, or can you translate that into communicating that way? So everything from the outside looking in that the CFL did here in terms of putting this on was absolutely outstanding. And I really just wanted to make sure that I showcased my appreciation for obviously the time and the effort that went into this.
Amen. And obviously a lot of folks love watching the NFL Combine as it just plays on TV on NFL Network for the week that it does go. I'm not even going to gripe as much as often as I do about, oh, get it, this on broadcast TV. They're competing with the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournament. Like that's a tough thing to have to go up against, but they're still investing, to your point about the quality of the broadcasters, all the streams, everything like this. They're not just saying, well, you know what? We're competing against these two other mega sports events that we have the rights in Canada to broadcast, and we're just going to make this a lesser than product. They still put in the effort for it. Actually, you know what? The caps on the helmets, I just need somehow to get the, we need somehow the team coloring going a little bit. You know what I mean? There's times where I'm thinking like,
Let's do player safety, but also we want to see the boys want to show off the colors. Come on.
1,000%. Yeah, that'll do it for our wrap on the National Combine. Again, so many winners, the CFL, and us just as fans being up there amongst the rest of them. We have a few more player interviews coming your way as part of our draft stories build up to the 2024 CFL draft. Next up, we're speaking with Edmonton Elk Scott Hutter, former Laurier Golden Hawk himself, a kid out of the London area, a young football player with a dream who is living it that we can't wait to share everything he has to say. So that'll come out about a week from now. So stay tuned. We'll talk to you right here at the 55. And scene.